From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Paramount Theater in Seattle, Washington, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Oh, yes, indeed, we do. We share your enthusiasm, ladies and gentlemen. Later on, we are going to be delighted to have novelist Tom Robbins on the show to answer our questions. We hear two things made him the novelist that he is: taking LSD and moving to Seattle. We will ask him which of these was weirder. But first, an awful thing happened in Major League Baseball this week. You know what I'm talking about? No, I'm not talking about the umpire blowing the pitcher's perfect game. I'm talking about what happened afterwards. The umpire apologized, and the pitcher forgave him. It's un-American, because the only thing more American than baseball is endless, pointless arguments about baseball. Well, we invite you to take our game way, way too seriously for your own good. Give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Autumn from Vienna, Virginia.
Hello, Autumn. How are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm fine. They have a lovely name, Autumn.
Thank you. My parents were hippies.
Your parents were hippies. You're just going to just say it.
Yes.
That's pretty moderate for a hippie name.
Well, my brother's name is Hunter, though they were going to name him Forrest.
Forrest. Okay, so I guess ultimately you lucked out is what you're saying.
Yes.
Well, welcome to our show, Autumn. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to the man behind everything you will find at the internationally known website, Baudette.com. Mr. Tom Baudette is here.
Hello, Autumn.
Hi, Tom.
Next, a comedian performing at the Northern California Center for the Arts in Grass Valley, California, July 10th. Paula Poundstone is here.
Hey, Adam.
Hey, Paula.
And lastly, the host of the podcast Too Beautiful to Live, Seattle's own Mr. Luke Burbank.
Hi, Adam.
Hi, Luke.
They're not booing.
No.
I don't think.
Autumn, you're going to start us out with Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle will now recreate for you three quotations from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain two of them. Do that, you will win our prize. Carl's voice in your home answering machine. You ready to go?
Let's go.
Let's do it. Here is your first quote.
I am furious at this entire situation.
That was somebody finally giving in to the demands that he show some anger by completely failing to convincingly show anger. Who?
President Obama.
Indeed, President Obama. You know what would finally end the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico? President Obama yelling at it. At least that's what the conventional wisdom says. At the White House press briefing on Tuesday, spokesman Robert Gibbs was asked, "Can you describe the president's rage? Does he yell and scream? What does he do?" Gibbs said, quote, "Well, the president's jaw was clenched." Pathetic, pathetic, especially because, as it turns out, the president's jaw was clenched around his ivory cigarette holder during a game of canasta.
Now, I think it's more of an old school paternal anger he's got. It's like that when you make your dad so mad that he just looks at you, shaking his head, "I'm so disappointed."
Yeah, it's just deadly.
Yeah, and it hurts so much more than if he just yelled at you.
Sadly, the oil spill seems to be immune to that kind of subtle psychological pressure. It is true, Obama has handled this problem so far in his usual conciliatory way. He offered, for example, in dealing with the oil spill, he offered to incorporate some of the well's ideas in his plan. It could continue to spew, but maybe it could spew something other than oil, perhaps yogurt. Something more healthy. Then, realizing that wasn't working, he decided to go to DEFCON 3. He invited the well to the White House for a beer summit. The well declined to come for fear Joe Biden would show up and out-spew it. All right, very good. Here is your next quote.
Ooh, my. I'm getting the vapors.
That was Democratic consultant Paul Begala. He was, of course, feigning shock at Republican accusations that the Obama administration has been illegally offering what to people it wants to influence?
Jobs?
Yes, jobs. Well, you know, in his defense, President Obama did say that he was going to work as hard as he could to create jobs. This week's news was that the White House admitted it offered a job to a Colorado politician to try to keep him out of a primary, which he refused, just like the last guy they tried it with, Congressman Sestak. Now, this sort of thing has been going on in politics since Nebuchadnezzar first ran for Babylon dog catcher. But still, the Republicans point out that Obama promised no more politics as usual. In other words, they are mad at him for not being better than they are. But more to the point, none of these job offers were accepted. It's not that Obama is corrupt, it's that he's bad at being corrupt. Here, in exchange for your support, we are offering you a warm handshake and a signed Yes, We Can poster. Hello? You still there? Congressman, hello?
Why would you take a job under a guy with that kind of a legendary temper, though?
I know.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. This must be so frustrating for the Republicans to watch. I mean, the Republicans are good at this sort of thing. For them, it must be like watching your dad play Xbox. You know, it's like, no, you don't. Just press the. No, you. Just let me do it, okay? You know? All right, very good. Autumn, here is your last quote.
Perhaps the love faded away through the years like a slowly melting glacier.
That was New York Magazine being a little snarky, reacting to the shocking news that what enduring political couple is, in fact, separating.
Alan
Tipper
Gore.
Yeah, the Gores. True. This news was very sad for the Gores, of course. They've been married for 40 years, 4 years of which was just that kiss at the Democratic National Convention. And it was a terrible blow to everyone else who were trying to make their marriages work. I mean, no longer can you say to yourself, well, hey, if the Gores can stand each other, maybe we can too. The couple is not talking much about exactly what happened, but they have said it was an amicable split, best for both of them. We do wonder how it went through. Did Al bring up a PowerPoint slideshow? See, Tipper, you can see under this list, marked things that it isn't, I've indicated you. While over on this list of things that it is, the number one factor is me.
It's really hard to believe, isn't it?
It really is. I was really sad about this. I was kind of broken up because there are certain things you want to believe in. Good things are possible.
It's like you ran 26 miles. Just crawl the last GD 2/10 of a mile.
Well,
roll there. We've seen the end of the triathlon.
I think
that is a young man's perspective, isn't
yeah.
it?
I think an older person might say, you know, I've run 26 miles with you. I don't want to have to spend my last 0.2 with the same person, if you don't mind.
You know, now that you've said Al and Tipper so much, maybe it just one day dawned on him, I'm married to a woman named Tipper. It's not the sort of thing you notice during the first 40. Up around 39, it starts to get to you. Al, honey, what? Tipper.
Carl, how did Autumn do in our quiz?
Peter, Autumn has been following the news. She had 3 correct answers, so she wins our prize.
Well done, Autumn. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Luke, with the rise of iPads and digital readers, paper periodicals are coming up with new ways to keep sales up. For example, the publishers of Field and Stream magazine claim you can do something with their latest print issue that you just can't do with an iPad. What?
Can I have a hint?
Well, actually, you could do this with an iPad, but you'd have to be really, really mad at it, somewhat foolhardy, and armed.
You could shoot a gun at it?
Yes.
It's a target?
Yes. They're advertising. This is a magazine that
they
you can
shoot at. They do have an app for that.
The cover of Field and Stream screams, "Shoot this magazine," above a paper target, and with another pullout target inside the magazine. Says Field and Stream's Shotguns editor, quote, "This is something you can't do with an iPad." He then reconsidered and said, quote, "Well, you can take an iPad out and shoot it, but it's prohibitively expensive." Other magazines are quickly getting in this custom game. There's a new Architectural Digest, which you can use to balance your broken IKEA coffee table. There's the hot-selling Us Weekly's Scratch and Sniff issue. Stars, they smell just like us. Avoid the Nick Nolte feature. And then there's the new edition of The Economist. It has a special interactive feature only available in the print edition. When you hold it right in front of you on the train, it makes you look like a pretentious ass. So.
Oh. You can do that with the iPad.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Right now it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff of the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Yes, Dennis Kavanaugh in Sausalito, California.
Hey, Sausalito is totally beautiful. Let me ask you a question. Living in such a beautiful place, do you ever get tired of it?
No. The beautiful view on the water, we sail a lot and kayak, that type of thing.
Can you give me anything to make me feel better for not living there? Just anything. Anything wrong
just
with
stay
it.
In Chicago.
Thanks a lot, Dennis. Well, welcome to the show, Dennis. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Dennis's topic?
Music. It's not just for listening anymore.
This week, we read a story that proves music has powers beyond sounding pretty. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories about songs being used for things other than setting the mood. Choose the true story. You'll win Carl's voice in your home answering machine. Ready to play?
Yes.
First up, let's hear from Tom Baudet.
Coming back in your next life as a sewage-eating organism just got a little less terrible. German officials believe that playing Mozart to their treatment facility microbes helps the tiny organisms break down sewage more quickly. Piping in such classics as The Magic Flute and The Marriage of Figaro is putting shice-eating grins on the faces of those little microbes and could save in the neighborhood of $1,200 a month on sludge disposal operations at their Trunbreitzen treatment facility southwest of Berlin. The scheme was developed by scientists at German firm Mundus, who say microbes are particularly partial to harmonies and rhythms. When combined with large quantities of oxygen, the sonic patterns stimulate activity and help to break down sludge more efficiently. No word if experiments with boys to men are producing results, or if it is true that the Wagner trials resulted in the microbes attempting to invade Poland.
Music is a sewage treatment scheme in Germany. Your next story of music making the world go round comes from Paula Poundstone.
In an attempt to capture the zeal of their youngest employees, McDonald's has created a pilot musical program to aid their food preparers. Instead of management asking workers to remove their headphones when they clock in, they ask them to plug in. As the order for each food is entered in the cash register, it triggers a rap song with step-by-step instruction on the food's preparation and the cleanup as you go. There are such memorable lyrics as, "Flip your patty on the grill and grab your dill, pickle." And the toe tapping, "Put on the top of your bun, and now just for fun, wipe the sesame seeds or you'll be in the weeds." Management is very pleased with the results, but the employees less so. "I used to like rap music," says 18-year-old Rondell J. Watley. "Now I'm going to start listening to folk or classical or some damn thing." "Grab your patty, who's your daddy? What kind of crap is that?"
Rap music being used to encourage employees at McDonald's to do things the right way. Your last story of thinking outside the music box comes from Luke Burbank.
Every long-term relationship has its ups and downs when it comes to, you know, mommy and daddy's special wrestle times. But when you're two very expensive, very endangered pandas brought together specifically for the purpose of mating, Someone's got to turn on your heart lights. That's just what the staff at the National Zoo in Washington did in the case of Tian Tian and Mei Xiong, two pandas who just couldn't seem to get in the mood for love. Enter the music of Mr. Peebo Bryson. First we tried If Ever I'm In Your Arms Again, said Nicole McCorkle, head of the panda program at the zoo. But it was definitely Tonight I Celebrate My Love that did the trick. If you catch my drift. It worked so well, we were flooded with elementary school principals asking us to please turn off the zoo's webcam. Sure enough, Mei Xiong gave birth 3 months ago to a bouncing baby cub the zoo has named Tayshawn, but who everybody calls by his nickname, Lil Peebo.
All right, then. Dennis, here are your choices. From Tom Baudet, music being used to help process sewage at a plant in Germany. From Paula Poundstone, music being used in the form of raps to help McDonald's employees know how to make a burger. And from Luke Burbank, music put two pandas in the mood at the National Zoo. Which of these is an unusual use of music?
I think number three. I saw the pandas one time, and I think they needed music.
Really? They didn't look very romantic?
I'm right?
No, well, I'm sad. You want to get right by the chat and get right to the answer. All right, well, your choice then is Luke's story. Well, we spoke to an NPR producer to bring us the truth.
Playing Mozart operas to sewage to stimulate the breakdown of microbes is proving a breath of fresh air for the German sewage works, fiscally speaking at least.
That was Esme Nicholson, NBR's Berlin producer. So I'm sorry you did not get it right, but you earned a point for Luke for his very good idea for any panda breeding costume. Dennis, thank you so much for playing with us. Bye-bye. And now the game where we invite on brilliant people and ask them stupid questions. Our guest today is the author of the kinds of books about which people say, that book changed my life. Still Life with Woodpecker, Even Cowgirls Get the Blues, Skinny Legs and All. Most recently a book called B is for Beer, which delightfully is for children. We hear two things made Tom Robbins the writer he is today, taking LSD for the first time and moving to Seattle. We're very excited to have him join us here. Tom Robbins, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Thank you.
I'm thrilled to the marrow. My thyroid is pumping.
Now, you've been in Seattle a long time, since the 60s.
I moved to Seattle in 1962.
Right. But you had started in North Carolina, where you were born.
And Virginia.
In Virginia.
And actually, I was trying to get to Japan.
But you just...
I ran out of money in Seattle.
Really?
And it rained for 40 days and 40 nights, and I thought, I could live here.
Really? There was something about the rain that you, much like an orchid, you found that conducive.
Well, it's a perfect climate for a writer.
Because you never want to go outside.
Keeps you indoors. It's cozy, it's romantic, it turns you inward.
Wow.
I've actually been writing since I was 5 years old.
Since you were five?
I have. There are stories still in existence that I wrote when I was five. However, I did not get published until I was seven.
Well, every writer does have to have his years of struggle.
I went to a large consolidated school in Appalachia, and I wrote the story when I was in the second grade, and I took it up to the third floor to the school newspaper office. It was written and edited by juniors and seniors.
Yeah.
And I slapped the story down on the desk, and I said, print this.
And did they do it?
And they did. And I thought, well, that was easy. Maybe I could do this for a living.
Wow. I was reading Jitterbug Perfume recently, and one of the big themes of that book, which has a lot of themes, is the struggle against growing older. In fact, two characters figure out how not to grow older, that is. And I was wondering, you wrote that book 20 years ago, 25 years ago or so, and 25 years later, do you have any different feelings about growing older?
Well, I have discovered the fountain of youth. It's Wikipedia.
Really?
because I'm actually 77 years old, but Wikipedia lists me as 74.
There you go.
Sweet.
If you were to go on and edit it yourself, which you can, you could be any age you want. You could be you could be 47.
I have never, ever Googled myself. In fact, I think the Christian right prohibits such things.
Right. You are allowed... You are allowed to Google yourself until you need glasses.
We have a question from one of our Twitterers. I sent this into Twitter / wait, wait. Apparently, you have a love of mayonnaise?
Yeah, I eat so much mayonnaise they were going to send me to the Mayo Clinic.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is how you become the voice of the baby boom generation. That's it, right there. There are a lot of puns in your books, as a matter of fact. But is this true? Are you, in fact, a genuine mayo enthusiast, or are you putting us on?
No, I am indeed. I think it's the food of the gods. In fact, once, and this is a true story, having nothing else to mix the gin with, I put mayonnaise and gin in a blender and created a new drink that my friends and I called the gin greasy, I think.
The gin greasy.
Yeah. And it was actually, we mixed it with, there were only two things in the refrigerator.
What were you drinking before you got to that idea?
In the refrigerator was blueberry pancake syrup and mayonnaise.
Lord.
So we didn't want to drink the gin straight.
Yeah.
And we tried it first with the blueberry pancake syrup, and it was awful.
Well,
then we mixed it with the mayonnaise, and it was actually pretty good.
Yes, on the heels of having it with blueberry syrup.
And ether.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about your latest book, B is for Beer. This is a children's book about beer.
True.
Why not? I'm all for this, but why did you think children needed a book about beer?
Well, children are exposed to beer all the time. Every time they watch any sporting event on TV, they
sure.
see beer commercials. But aside from that, and aside from beer's historical and philosophical background, don't you think that children really need to know why their daddy keeps a second refrigerator out in the garage? And why he's out there late on school night with his shirt off listening to Aerosmith records.
Are you still writing novels? I mean, you've written a children's book. Or
I'm taking a sabbatical now from novel writing, and I'm actually trying my hand at a TV reality show.
A reality show?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, what will its premise be?
Well, it's called Fungi for the Straight Guy.
All right.
And the premise is that each week we select a conservative middle-aged businessman from suburbia
yeah.
and feed him a heroic dose of magic mushrooms.
Right.
And a camera crew will follow him around for 6 hours and to see what he does.
Tom Robbins, ladies and gentlemen.
Tom Robbins, we are delighted to have you with us, and we've asked you here today to play a game that this time we're calling...
Unleash the Power Within.
I am sure this happens to you a lot. You're walking down the street, and someone comes up to you and says, "Please, Mr. Robbins, help me find my greatest potential for success right now." And you say, "Oh, I'm sorry, that's Tony Robbins." Well, we are going to ask you about the other... Mr. T. Robbins. Get two questions right, and you win a prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine. Carl, who is Tom Robbins playing for?
Peter, Tom is playing for Joshua Thompson from Cupertino, California.
All right.
Here's your first question. Tony Robbins, as we know, is a big self-help mogul. He puts on seminars and shows. You can go to his private island in Fiji and learn from him. But for a handful of bigwigs, he does provide something unique for a fee of $1 million. Is it A, he'll give you his home phone number for a year, you can call him whenever you want, B, he'll appear in your family photos with you, or C, while motivating you, he will simultaneously get in touch with your rivals and enemies and demotivate them?
Well, considering the context, I'll say A.
You're going to say A, that he'll give you his home phone number. You can call him up whenever you want to spell. Yeah. You're right. That's what $1 million per year gets you. Tony Robbins' home phone number.
Wow.
All right, second question. Tony Robbins has given advice to many world leaders, including Bill Clinton, and he claims which person who doesn't seem likely to need this motivational advice. Was it A, Mother Teresa, B, North Korean dictator Kim Jong-il, or C, teen heartthrob Justin Bieber? One of these has consulted, according to Tony Robbins. Tony Robbins.
Well, Mother Teresa just sounds too good to be true. So I'll go with the Korean.
You're going to go with the Korean, that North Korean dictator Kim Jong-il, head of the Hermit Kingdom, has... I'd love it if that were true. That'd be great. But in fact, it was Mother Teresa. Tony Robbins says that he consulted with Mother Teresa, and Tony Robbins says, quote, I asked Mother Teresa, tell me something, what really gives you ecstasy in life? And she said, what gives me ecstasy, Tony, is to see a person die with a smile on their face. And I thought, whoa, you know, not number one on my list, unquote. All right, this is the last question. Get this right, you win. As you may know, Tony Robbins not only teaches success, he exemplifies it. How did he describe his, quote, perfect day once to CNN? A, quote, if I had a perfect day, I'd know there was nothing more I could do to improve myself, and thus I would ascend to heaven, unquote.
Boy.
B, quote, a day in which some guy digging in a ditch in Bangalore says to himself, Tony Robbins believe I can do better than this. Or C, quote, make love to my lady, work out, have a great breakfast, and then, you know, go ride the Harley, go play polo, that type of thing, unquote. Which of these did he say was his perfect day?
Let's try C.
You're going to try C? Make love to my lady, work out, have a great breakfast, and then, you know, go ride the Harley, go play polo, that type of thing?
Sure.
Yes, that's what he said. All right. Tony Robbins makes over $30 million a year making other people successful, and he likes to spend it on his expensive toys like helicopters and polo ponies. Carl, how did Tom Robbins do in our quiz?
Well, Tom came through at the end, Peter. He had two correct answers, and so he wins for Joshua Thompson.
Well done. Tom Robbins is the author of Still Life with Woodpeckers, Skinny Legs and All, Even Cowgirls Get the Blues, and a whole bunch of other books you should just go read immediately. Tom Robbins, thank you so much for being with us. What a pleasure. Seattle Zone, Tom Robbins. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for having me.
In just a minute, Carl tells us about his favorite Transformer, Optimus Rhyme. In our Listener Limerick Challenge, if you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Tom, you remember John Gotti Jr. He's the son of the big mob boss, and he's in prison now for being a mob boss himself. Well, it turns out that in prison, he's developed a new passion. What?
His new passion, macrame.
Well, it's natural he'd do this in prison because we understand that their Goodnight Moon is popular both as a bedtime story and recreational activity.
Oh, he's writing children's books.
Yes, he is. John Gotti Jr., the mobster, revealed that while awaiting a trial for corrupt mobby things he did, he's become a sort of the Richard Scarry of Sing Sing. He's passing his time in the stir by writing a children's book. It is illustrated by his cellmate, a, quote, sweetheart of a kid who happens to be serving 17 years for bank robbery. Unfortunately, Gotti said, this mobster bank robber duo could not find a publisher. However, we got our hands on an exclusive copy. It's hand-carved into prison-issue soap. I'll read the opening page. See Spot talk? Uh-oh. You shouldn't have talked, Spot.
It's certainly a cautionary tale there.
Paula, a bit of controversy at an Oklahoma prison. Some are saying a recent initiative is unfair to the prisoners there, while prison officials say it's an important component in preventing escapes. What is it? What's this program?
They've been locking the doors.
Yes, that's so wise of them at this prison.
Yeah, it's really got the prisoners upset.
No, it's hard to, I'll give you a hint, it's hard to go over the wall and escape when you're wearing comically large shoes.
They make them wear clown shoes?
Pretty well, they make them wear clown suits, more or less. Last year, Oklahoma's Cleveland County Penitentiary traded in the traditional orange prison jumpsuits for giant pink shirts, ballooning yellow striped pants, and jelly sandals. Clown couture. One official says, quote, "We want our inmates to be identifiable. If one of them slips over the wall, we want to know about it right away." Actually,
they'll just slip over and go do birthday parties.
Yeah. To me, it sounds more like the prison officials want to let the poor guys run around for a while for the entertainment value. They, you know, the guy escapes, the loudspeakers start playing the Benny Hill theme. There's some indications the inmates are actually embracing this whole circus vibe. One inmate seems to be wearing a flower on his lapel. You lean in to smell it, he shanks you. 28 prisoners are now plotting to escape in a single tiny Volkswagen Bug. Tom, a former employee is suing Citibank. She says she was fired because of something she can't help. What does she say she was given as grounds for her dismissal?
She can't help it.
Yeah, it's a characteristic. It's an unchanging characteristic. She can't help it, so it's discrimination against her.
She sucked at her job.
No. Well, let me put it this way. Despite the economy, her interest rates kept going up.
Oh, she's too beautiful.
She's too hot, in fact. Too hot. That was the problem. You know
oh,
that?
Oh, I've had that.
Yeah. You understand what that's like, Paula.
That's why you're self-employed, isn't it?
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Well, you know that tricky moment in a job interview when they ask what your greatest weakness is? Well, one, Deborah Lee Lorenzana has a good answer from now on. She's just too damn sexy. The suit alleges Citibank told her to stop wearing turtlenecks, pencil skirts, and other form-fitting business wear to work. She said other women wore that stuff, but according to the suit she filed, her bosses said, quote, "The general unattractiveness of other women in the office rendered moot their sartorial choices." And in fact,
it sounds like that's where the lawsuit is.
Yeah.
Actually, that's
and in fact, what happened was Ms. Lorenzana was eventually fired because other Citibank employees were spending too much time ogling her and not enough time stealing from their customers. So they had to let her go.
That has to be kind of a good news, bad news situation, really, though, right?
Why?
When you're called into the office, the bad news is you're being fired. The good news is because you are smoking hot. Like the most flattering way ever to get fired.
It was still tough for me. Yeah.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can click the Contact Us link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Kristen from Tucson, Arizona.
I love Tucson, a beautiful place.
It's nice and hot right now.
It's nice and hot, and we'll stay that way for what will seem like the rest of your life. I know that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, welcome to our show, Kristen. You're going to play, of course, our Listener Limerick Challenge. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with a last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, and just two of the limericks, you will be a winner. Ready to play?
You betcha.
All right. Here is your first limerick.
We said, "Tessellite triangles, please," and our whining brought them to their knees. Now Subway's warm bread is evenly spread. They'll no longer overlap.
Cheese.
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, the great cheese war is over and the forces of good have won. Following 3 years of protests, Subway Sandwiches announced it will start, quote, tessellating its cheese, meaning each slice will lie flush against another, allowing for full coverage of the sandwich surface. No longer will they overlap, leaving blank spaces. Said one proponent, and this is a real quote, "Now is the time for the new procedure. You can almost picture taking every homogeneous bite. It's okay now. Everything will always and forever be okay now." Unquote.
How many times did I say them? Please tessellate my cheese.
You joke, but other people have been after them for a while, and now they've won.
Yeah.
There you go. The forces of good get a victory. Here we go.
Wow.
Here's your next limerick.
Plastic shoes prevented worse shocks, or so say emergency docs. The poolside hair dryer had some exposed wire, but I was not zapped thanks to
Crocs.
Right. It seems that those notorious plastic shoes known as Crocs are good for more than just keeping you celibate. This week. A 3-year-old British boy picked up a faulty hairdryer in a swimming pool dressing room and was saved from a possibly fatal electric shock when the big floppy doofus shoes his mom made him wear acted as insulators. So there you have it. When wearing Crocs, even electricity wants nothing to do with you. Here's your last limerick.
This giraffe can eat leaves off the limb, but in water, my chances look dim. Yet math is clairvoyant and shows that I'm buoyant. They've proven that I just might.
Swim.
Everybody has done it. You're staring at a giraffe loping its graceful way over the savannah, and you say to yourself, I wonder if that bad boy can swim. Now we know, and no giraffes were moistened in making this discovery, using a digital model of a giraffe submerged in digital water. The authors of a study recently published in the journal Theoretical Biology, there is such a journal, found that giraffes do become buoyant in deep water and would be hypothetically able to paddle themselves to shore. You might wonder who might fund such a study. Turns out it was a pack of hyenas.
That's not what I would ask myself looking at a giraffe.
Really? Can it swim?
I would want to know, like, if it could cook or drive. If I could animate it in these situations, you know, to really know for sure. Yeah.
Is it a good tipper?
Yeah. Carl, how did Kristen do in our quiz?
Kristen had a great round, Peter. 3 correct answers. So, Kristen, congratulations. You win our prize.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Kristen.
Thank you.
Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill in the blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Tom Beaudet and Luke Burbank each has 3 points. Paula Poundstone has 2.
All right, Paula. You're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question, fill in the blank. On Wednesday, the United National Human Rights Council passed a resolution condemning Israel's raid on a Gaza-bound blank.
Flotilla.
Yes, the corruption trial against former Illinois Governor Blank finally began in Chicago this week.
Blagojevich.
Right. On Thursday, the World Health Organization warned that the Blank pandemic is not over yet.
Swine flu.
Right. Nearly a year after he negotiated reporter Laura Ling's release from North Korea, she named her baby in honor of Blank.
Bill Clinton.
Right. Contrary to reports, Democrat Dennis Kucinich and his statuesque wife, Elizabeth, are not writing a children's book about their relationship titled Blank.
Mutt and Jeff.
No, called The Monkey and the Giraffe. Jack Nicholson was among the mourners at a service held for Easy Rider actor and director Blank on Wednesday.
Dennis Hopper.
Right, the Supreme Court changed Miranda rights so that suspects must explicitly say they plan to remain blank.
Silent.
Right, an 89-year-old British crossword puzzle solver was shocked at what he found when he used Google to help him figure out the clue blank.
When he used Google to help him figure out the clue, oh my, Ken Howard.
No, when he used Google to figure out the clue wild Asian ass. The word the puzzle wanted was onager. It's a species of wild Asian donkey, but 89-year-old Jack Sedgwick could not for the life of him solve it on his own. So he took the clue, wild Asian ass, Googled it, and he found that none of the results that showed up would fit into the allotted space or were words. He also noted that for wild creatures, they looked awfully affectionate. Carl, how did Paula do? I thought she did quite well.
She had a fine round, Peter. 6 correct answers, 12 Woo! More points. She now has 14 points and the lead.
Well done. Very well done, Paula.
Thank you very much.
We flipped a coin. Tom is elected to go next. So, fill in the blank, Tom. U.S. officials announced they had once again killed the number 3 leader of blank.
Al-Qaeda.
Right. President Obama met with the governor of blank this week to discuss immigration regulations.
Arizona.
Right. Scientists are studying how tropical storm Agatha caused an enormous blank to appear in Guatemala.
Oh, a sinkhole.
Right. After failing to deliver on his promises, the prime minister of blank resigned Wednesday after only 8 months in office.
Japan.
Right. A sign urging cautious driving in a rural area in England with a large fox population reads blank.
Fox crossing?
No, it says, and I'll read this carefully, for fox's sake, slow down.
Oh. Yeah,
Fox, F-O-X. Yeah. Animal, bushy tail.
Nice.
Nothing to worry about, FCC. Creators of the Broadway musical Avenue Q announced that in spite of his death, they would not write out a character based on the child actor blank.
Oh, Gary Coleman.
Right. This year's NBA Finals began with a rematch between perennial rivals, the blank and the blank.
The Celtics and the Lakers.
Right. A Utah woman is suing Google for damages after she was injured during a walk because blank.
Wild Asian asses.
No. No. She's suing Google because the Google Maps suggested she walk on the highway in her route. Lauren Rosenberg wasn't planning to take a stroll on the highway, but since Google Maps thought it was a good idea, she thought, sure, why not? Google can't be wrong. They did so well when I used it to help me solve my crossword puzzle. Carl, how did Tom do in our quiz?
Well, Tom had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 15 points, and Tom has taken the lead.
Well done. So I'm guessing the Seattle crowd is rooting for Luke. How many does he need to win?
He needs 6 to tie, 7 to win outright.
All right, here
Get
we go.
Get ready for disappointment.
They want it, Luke. They want it. Here we go, Luke.
Oh, my God.
Here we go, Luke. This is for the game. Fill in the blank. Attorney General Eric Holder announced that authorities have opened criminal and civil investigations into the blank.
BP oil spill.
Right. Severe thunderstorms disrupted a wreath-laying ceremony President Obama was attending in honor of blank.
Memorial Day.
Right. Black box evidence shows that pilots in the plane crash that killed the president of blank were warned it was unsafe to land.
Poland.
Right. Rue McClanahan, best known for her role as Blanche in the TV show Blank, died at age 76.
Golden Girls.
Right. In a trial run, 2 men from Maine went 220 feet in a rocket car powered by blank.
Air.
No. Mentos and Diet Coke.
I saw that video.
And there you are. Confining themselves in windowless capsules, a group of international scientists began a 520-day simulation of a flight to blank.
Mars.
Right. Surprising Seattle Mariner fans before Wednesday's game, baseball star blank announced his retirement.
Ken Griffey Jr.
Right. On Australian kookaburra, who was addicted to sausages and too fat to fly, has been blanked.
Transported to where it needs to go.
No, has been given a personal trainer. The fat kookaburra bird was found waddling away from the group of dogs that were chasing it, and animal experts quickly realized that the bird's diet of stolen barbecue had made it too fat to get off the ground. Couldn't survive in the wild, so it's now in a rehabilitation center where it has been given a bird gym and 3 daily sessions with a personal trainer. But its push-up regimen is somewhat impaired by the fact it has no arms.
Carl, did Luke do well enough to win?
Luke needed at least 6 correct answers to tie, and he had 6 correct answers. So hey, with 15 points, Luke Burbank and Tom Baudette are this week's co-champions.
There you go. Well done. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists what will finally make President Obama truly explode with anger. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the National Association of Realtors, providing information for those buying or selling their homes at houselogic.com/buy and sell. The George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, a source for what works in education. Learn more at edutopia.org. And Pabst Brewing, proud supporter of local artists nationwide and of the NPR All Songs Considered series online at PabstBlueRibbon.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Stupid Berman, executive producer, technical direction from Robert Showbiz Newhouse and Lorna White. Special thanks to Mike Miles and the crew at the beautiful Paramount Theater. BJ Lederman composed our theme. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Now, panel, what will finally make President Obama truly show his inner rage? Tom Baudette.
Daughter Malia will come into the bathroom again while he's shaving and ask why he can't be smart and funny like Glenn Beck.
Luke Burbank.
During the annual White House softball game, a teabagger first base ump accidentally, but probably on purpose, blows a call at first, ruining the president's perfect game.
And Paula Poundstone.
One of his great-great-grandchildren will leave the pod door open and he'll just go off.
Well, if any of that ticks off the president panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell
Thank
Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Karen Andreessen and Arvid Hokunson at KUOW, Seattle WA. Thanks also to Paula Poundstone, Luke Burbank, and Tom Baudette. Thanks to the fantastic crowd here in Seattle, Washington. Thanks to all of you at home for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week back home in Chicago. This is NPR.